Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at the archetypal qualities of Mars in the sign of Gemini. Now, this is not still the long treatment I'm going to be doing next week when we take a real proper look at Mars in Gemini from August to March, right? With a long retrograde. We're going to start doing that deep dive into the Mars retrograde and Mars horoscopes and all of that kind of stuff next week. So that kind of treatment will begin then. Today is a rewind episode. I'm going to take you back to a deep dive that I did on Mars and Gemini a couple of years ago. This is a part of trying to, again, help reboot that series because people always send me emails being like, hey, have you ever made a video on Mars and Gemini before? And yes, I have. There's a Planets and Profile series that I did for Venus, Mars, and Mercury. I've taken them through all 12 signs. So just kind of rebooting that because there's literally thousands and thousands of people who have not been on my channel since then. And we can see the data of how those videos are being watched. And that's content that for a lot of people might be really interesting and valuable. So that's why we're going to reboot that episode today. I hope you guys will enjoy it. We'll be doing, again, a deep dive on Mars and Gemini next week. Before we dive into this Mars and Gemini video, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments, click on the notification bell. All of that helps the channel to grow. It really helps when you leave a comment. Talk about if you like the video, what it made you think of, what stories you have. If you have the Mars and Gemini in your chart natally, tell us about that. Don't forget, you can find a transcript of my daily talk on the website, nightlightastrology.com, where if you navigate to right now, which I will do just very briefly here, you can also learn more about our upcoming classes. Roots and Spheres begins on January 19th. Oh, I'm noticing a little typo there. So you can join us for a year-long planet and plant moon circle, and that is our Roots and Spheres class. This is a way of diving into the astrology in a really experiential way, dieting plants throughout the year for every moon cycle, and getting really intentional about the way in which we work with the energies as a kind of spiritual practice. This is marrying the study of herbs, herbalism, plant spirit medicine, and astrology with my wife Ashley. This will be really fun. You can also check out the masterclass series. That series also starts in the new year, and the sales on these classes run until September 12th. The masterclass series includes four seminar series of four classes each, 16 total. In the winter, we're doing a series on the mysteries of the moon cycle. In the spring, we're looking at the cycles of Venus and Mercury. In the summer, we're looking at an ancient timing technique called zodiacal releasing. And in the fall, we're looking at calculation of temperament in ancient astrology and the birth chart, which is a really fascinating subject. Any of those programs that I just mentioned, you can find on the website, like I said, nightlightastrology.com, where you can also sign up with the early bird payment. That saves you a bunch of money. There's also tuition assistance and a payment plan if you need it. So, hit us up if we can be of any help. Make sure that you don't feel, we try to make sure no one ever feels priced out of our programs. All right, any questions? Again, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. I hope you guys enjoy this rewind episode on Mars in Gemini. Take it easy. Hi, everybody. This is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and this is another episode of Planets in Profile. So I'm catching up on a few of these episodes that I've fallen behind on. Just at the tail end of Mars's transit through Gemini right now, I'm going to finally get on to talking about the meaning of Mars and Gemini. So that's the agenda for today's episode. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and put a little PowerPoint up on the screen. And the idea behind this series in general is to take a look at the movement of the planets through all of the 12 signs and give students of astrology some sense of the meaning of each planet in all of the 12 signs, how to read and interpret its meaning in a birth chart, and so forth. So with that being said, yesterday I put up a video on Venus in Aries, which I had to catch up on, almost tail end of Venus's transit through Aries, and now I'm catching up on Mars in Gemini. So, all right. So what can we say about Mars in the sign of Gemini? sign of the twins. I thought this image was perfect for Gemini. So I tried to find the funniest one that I could. This one really got me. So Mars traveling through any sign of the zodiac, as we've said in almost every Planets in Profile episode thus far, will be
understood in terms of the planetary host that it has a relationship with. So, for example, Mars in Gemini is in the home of Mercury, Hermes. Mercury, the Roman name, Hermes, the Greek name. So Gemini is the masculine domicile of Mercury, feminine being Virgo. Gemini is a warm, moist air sign. It's masculine, and it's what we call a double-bodied or sometimes called mutable sign. So when Mars is in Gemini, it expresses itself and all of its natural significations, which we'll talk about in a moment, through the filter of these primary and secondary qualities of the sign. The primary quality, in the way that I talk about the signs anyway, the primary quality being the relationship with Mercury. So it expresses itself in a mercurial manner. In the secondary fashion, the secondary elements of the sign would be the warm, moist quality, the double-bodied quality, the masculine quality, the airy quality. But the first thing that you always need to know is, whose sign is this and what kind of relationship does Mars have to Mercury? How do you blend the significations of Mars and Mercury to arrive at an interpretation? And of course, the answer is that this is going to be different in every single chart based on the position of Mercury. The aspectual connection between Mars and Mercury in any given chart will matter a great deal. The essential dignity of Mercury, the house position of Mercury, whether Mercury is an evening or morning star or combust or invisible behind the sun or Kazemi, any number of different conditions that Mercury might be expressing in the birth chart or in any kind of chart will be a part of the modification of the interpretation of Mars. And this is a big part of studying astrology. Astrology is context bound. So for example, yesterday on Facebook, I saw someone post something that said something like, so if a planet is like in this state and it's dignified like this, is that good or bad? And the question was just an attempt to use ancient language and theory to figure out if a planet was like good or bad or strong or weak. Most of the time, this kind of analysis is misguided because even though there are a variety of technical details that we need to take into consideration when reading a chart, the bottom line is that we're never searching for, is this planet strong or weak? Or those kinds of considerations are usually only a sort of preliminary level of analysis that's really leading us to say something concrete or something valuable or worthwhile to whoever our client is, right? So when we say, for example, that Mars is well dignified or Mars is poorly dignified or something like that, because you have to take into consideration house placement, aspects, testimonies from other planets, daytime or nighttime chart, like all of these different factors, there's so much context that is built into analyzing a planet. And at the end of the day, what we're really trying to say, what we're trying to do with that analysis, is to say something substantive about the life of a person, right? So just remember that for those of you who are out there who study any form of traditional astrology, the context of, for example, when studying Mars and Gemini, the context of Mercury in the chart and its relationship to Mars is not telling you, well, it's a good Mars or it's a bad Mars, it's a weak Mars or it's a strong Mars. It's trying to tell you something specific about a person, about their life, about their behavior or attitude or their experiences. So that's ultimately what we're trying to do by using these analytical tools. Okay, so that's an aside. Mars is going to express himself and his nature always. So what is the nature of Mars? It's going to be competition, aggression, warfare, violence, bravery, courage, assertiveness, action, cutting, severing, dividing. So those are the basic, I mean, that's the gist of it. Mars is kind of your hunter, your ultimate sort of warrior archetype. And Mars has a feminine and a masculine domicile, can be more yin or more yang. Mars in Gemini is in a masculine sign, so you're going to get more of an expressive energy, of energy that sort of moves from the center outward. You're going to get it. It's warm and moist, which means it's very fertile. It has the ability to be prolific or to produce or create things that are fruitful, that multiply. Air signs are like that. It has also tendency to be very social. Air signs are very social, and usually there's a more refined rational quality with air signs. So this is a more rational Mars. You also have this idea of Gemini being a double-bodied sign. Well, what does that mean, this double-bodied sign? Well, this is really at the core of the constellational or solar seasonal symbolism of Gemini. So if you think about what's happening at Gemini season, which I'll be talking about soon when I do the meaning of the sun in Gemini video, the sun is reaching the apex of its seasonal journey at the summer solstice, rising to its highest sort of arc in the sky where the day will be the longest in the northern hemisphere. So as it approaches that, it's since the spring equinox when the light has taken over, and all the way back to the summer, to the winter solstice when the light started rising again, the sun has been moving upward toward the pole star in the north. The arc of the sun in the sky, the ecliptic path of the daily sky, has been raising up slowly, and it's been moving north. The North Star, of course, represents an unchanging center around which everything revolves. The sun is its own center like that, but in a solar year, it's also moving around a fixed center, which is the pole star. Ancient astrologers looked at it that way. We see that explained by Hermes in the Hermetica. Now, when the seasonal journey of the sun reaches that topmost place of the summer solstice and the day is the longest, we're talking about the aspirational journey toward an ideal. That ideal could be an image rooted in something really selfish or something very spiritual or noble or progressive or whatever. It could be something really vain and materialistic, or it could be something that's really lofty and elevated. But we're talking about, in a general sense, the journey towards an ideal, the movement towards an unchanging center, the movement towards the pole star upward. So Gemini has the spring-like quality of being aspirational. It's the yang time of year, and the yang is growing. The light is building. So Gemini is an ambitious sign. It's a spring sign, so it's very youthful and ambitious, and it's about growth, and it's about movement, and it's about dynamism and moving towards an ideal. However, what happens exactly as the ideal is reached, as the summer solstice is reached, just at that moment, the sun begins to fall in the sky. As soon as that moment is reached, the transitional point of the summer solstice will take the sun back downward towards the fall equinox and the winter solstice. The light will immediately start to wane in the solar year. So there's this duality that's built into Gemini that is reflected in that turn, the aspiration. But as soon as one thing has been gained, it's let go of. As soon as one ideal has been reached, there's a disillusionment that follows. So similarly, everything in this world moves like that. If you think about, you know, even sexuality, human sexuality, you move towards a climax. And as soon as the climax is reached, then separation occurs. And there's then the energy comes down and the intensity of the attraction fades away until it's ready to build up again, right? So this is a natural part of life and energy in the material world, in our bodies, in our relationships, in so many different ways. This is the kind of shift, though, that Gemini embodies, movement towards the peak and the immediate turn to come down again. So, for example, one of my favorite Geminis had a lot to say about, it was a very good example of solar seasonal symbolism of Gemini was Tupac. Tupac, you know, he had a lot of quotes that were very typically sort of Gemini quotes. One of them, and I'm not going to remember it exactly, but one of them was basically like, it's the game of life. You got to try to go around the board as many times as you can before your time is up. And he also had this sense of disregard for things, yet a total belief in the afterlife. So he had this kind of flippancy about life and death, but also understanding of the afterlife of the soul. And these are on display in a lot of his quotes. It's very interesting. So similarly, Hermes, Mercury, Gemini in its masculine form at the springtime, very different mood than Virgo. The Virgo's Mercury is standing, again, a very youthful sign, Virgo, harvest maiden, standing on the threshold of the entryway into the underworld. That's really Mercury's favorite place, by the way, Virgo, because it's both in its rulership and exalted there. But in Gemini, you have the idea of the, you have the hermetic ideal, as well as the wisdom or sense of disillusionment with having obtained or gotten what you wanted or desired. You'll always notice that Geminis are often talked about as being two-sided or two-faced, or, you know, hear all these cliches. But a lot of that relates back to this idea that once something is had, it's immediately discarded or let go of, or once you satisfy a desire, you're immediately disappointed again, or you start all over somehow. Got to go around the board as many times as you can. Mars in Gemini is also going to express itself in terms of this double-bodied quality. It can be very restless. It can be incredibly ambitious, but also never fully satisfied. It can be sort of relentlessly youthful. And one of the qualities of youth, of course, if I watch my daughter, you know, like you'll watch a young child, is that there's a lot of energy. They exhaust it in a lot of different directions. You know, they'll just kind of run around and their energy is distributed everywhere. And they really will reach a place where then suddenly they'll crash, you know. And then after they crash, then they want to start all over again. So Mars and Gemini is also like this. It's very adventurous. It's very youthful. It's very ambitious planet. But it will also easily crash, lose interest, discard things that it's been ambitious about, and then start up on something new. And that that kind of quality of impermanence, and also kind of a wily trickster like quality, a feeling of knowing more than other people do that it's all a game, right? That you're just going around the board as many times as you can. That kind of wily trickster like quality is there. Of course, Mars and Mercury combinations in aspect, or when Mars is in Gemini, will also produce people who are incredibly they're like mentally agile. There's a lot of sort of mental dexterity, or they're really good writers or thinkers or craftsmen, or they're very skilled technicians, or they have really highly developed competitive skills. They're very good rhetoricians, or they can be aggressive or competitive scholars, or, you know, good on the debate team. This kind of marriage of the aggressive competitive qualities of Mars with the sophisticated mental and intellectual qualities of Mercury. I happen to know this one pretty well because I happen to have Mars in Gemini natally. So, this one's pretty familiar for me. For example, I grew up a preacher's kid in the church. And so, you know, growing up, I was kind of like the fast talking, sarcastic, sassy. Like I was on my report card, always says talks too much, you know, you know? So, and I was very good, for example. Mercury is also related, for example, to merchants and craftsmen, and to the marketplace, so like a bustling marketplace. Think of that in the old world sense. And Mars is Mars-Mercury combinations are also known for thieving and tricksters and stuff like that. So when I was a kid, I was really good at a couple of things. One was fundraising. Like we had these school fundraisers where you try to raise as much money as you could for a cause. And then if you did, there would be, if you raised so much money, there would be like a prize that you won. So for example, I would read. I did this thing called the MS Readathon. It was a, you read a certain number of books in a couple of months or something like that. And you get people to sponsor you per book that you read. And of course, because I was a preacher's kid, I just went to everybody in the church and got them to sponsor me for reading a whole bunch of books. Then because I was sort of a good, you know, I was a quick reader. I was a fast reader, Mars and Mercury sign. Mars, Mercury, speedy thinker, speedy readers. Not only was I a fast reader, but I was a good salesman, right? And then I would, fundraiser. So I would sell myself in this project that I was doing. Underneath it all, of course, even though I love to read, I really wanted the Sega Genesis. You know what I mean? Like the prize that you would get at the end. So then I would get it. I was like a state, you know, I got to go and accept an award as one of the top fundraisers in the state several years in a row doing this fundraiser and reading just a boatload of books in a really short amount of time. So also when I was a kid, I used to, this is embarrassing. I actually wrote about this in a memoir that I wrote that was published in 2010. Where I wrote about growing up in the church, but I used to steal money from both the soda machine because I knew where the janitor hid the key. So I'd go in and take soda and like maybe a couple bucks. And back then, you know, a couple dollars going to Ben Franklin or Anderson Drugstore in the town I grew up in, these small little places that had a huge candy aisles. A couple dollars could go pretty far. That I steal money from the offering plates that were left in the secretary's office afterwards because I would be able to go into my dad's office and they were connected. So, you know, I grew up with some degree of like buried trickster like thieving from the offering dishes. So that was, you know, Mars and Gemini thievery. When I was a kid and about 14 or 15, I went through a phase where I didn't steal things from stores. But I had a friend of mine who was a Gemini, a really good friend of mine who was a Gemini, and his sun is basically right on my Mars natally. And so the degree of the sun in Gemini in his chart is right on the degree of Mars in Gemini in my chart. And we would always end up finding ways of, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Sort of like treasure hunting. Like we would be during the summertime, we would get dragged around to people's houses because in both of our families were into the church. And so we were always over at people's houses in the church. And we'd always find a way of not really taking things of value, but sort of like treasure hunting in people's homes for interesting things and then just taking them. I think back, but I'm like, it's terrible. But it was just this kind of, you know, sneaky thing that we did. And sometimes money as well. There sort of was a phase that I went through when that was a big thing for me. And I actually got caught stealing suckers. There was in school there were these suckers that they sold for the band to make money for the band program. And I stole some suckers and ended up getting a day suspended from school, or like a half day suspended from school. And my dad brought me in to speak with a probation officer, and it scared the crap out of me, you know? So it was pretty mild stuff. I know people go through a lot worse, but that Mars in Gemini was being activated during that time through Time Lords and transits and things like that. You know, as for example, Mars in Gemini is also very resourceful and sort of Robin Hood-like. Right? Like steal from the rich to give to the poor. There can also be this kind of maverick quality with Mars and Mercury Mars is sort of can be very knightly, and Mercury is very intelligent. So sometimes you'll see people with that combination being very innovative, inventors or people who are entrepreneurial, because there's this kind of aggressive risk-taking quality with Mars, as well as a kind of ingenuity with Mercury. Mercury in ancient astrology was the planet of inventors. So for example, Mars is in Gemini in my second house, which is the house of money and finances. It's also the ruler of my marriage house. So my wife and I started a business together, and we basically invented a donation-based wellness collective with a special sliding scales and donation-based rates. And when we started this back in 2011, it was pretty new. There was a place that inspired me to do it in New York City called Yoga for the People, which was a donation-based yoga studio. But when I first started doing astrology readings, I thought, how can I get experience and how can I make a living doing this? And I remembered when I was a child that my mom took me to University of Minnesota dental office where the students would do teeth cleaning, and it was greatly discounted or even free if I remember correctly. So my mom always was very thrifty, and she has some Gemini placements in her chart, and she was always good at finding a deal. So I had remembered that, and I thought, well, what if I kind of did the same thing and said, hey, look, I'm training. I'd like to gain experience. So my readings for the first year will be donation-based. Well, because I had had a platform built off of the success of a book that I published, and I had an online platform sort of developed, there's Mars and Gemini again, my interest in writing and in trying to make a living through writing and speaking and teaching and things like that. I ended up having success in getting a lot of experience in that first year, all through donation-based readings. So Mars and Mercury can be really crafty like that, and very sort of inventive, because the Mars-like quality is always very, aggressive or whatever. Like when I was a kid, another thing that fits in with Mars-Mercury is Mars-Mercury combinations, very Robin Hood-like, the maverick. So I was always involved in fundraising for causes, for people who are suffering or whatever, and finding creative ways of raising money for people. Well, today, I basically do the same thing. For 10 years now, I've been doing all donation-based work and finding ways of making a living for myself while providing a lot of free content for massive amounts of people, and trying to get some small subsection of my readers who can afford to donate and support my work to do so. When I was a kid, I was literally obsessed with Robin Hood, right? I had this, and I had this really deep feeling of admiration for him because he had this kind of outlaw rebel mentality, but he was also really good. So that kind of vigilante, I'm going to do things my own way. They're going to be clever and smart and kind of good, but also slightly morally dubious. I've always really resonated with that archetype. It's very Mars in the sign of Mercury. So anyway, I'm giving you a lot of examples. I'm speaking more than I probably should about this one simply because I'm really familiar with it. But let's talk about some of the interesting people that have this placement, and you can see how it's on display in the lives of people that you may be familiar with. For example, Martin Luther King Jr., an incredible orator and writer and speaker. He was someone who rallied enthusiasm in people and had very innovative ways of rallying the support of people through speech. So, and he was someone who led a movement, Mars. Leader, warrior kind of mentality, but it was through intelligence. He also had a very lovable Venus in his chart. One thing to say, and I don't mean to diss Martin Luther King Jr., but he was also, if I remember correctly, a little bit of a philanderer. I think he had several affairs, not to judge anyone, but that can be a Mars and Gemini thing too, where there's a sort of, multiplicity of interests. It's a little bit more sort of polyamorous, or there can be, multiple, multitasking or multiple fields of activity or interest. And sometimes there's some degree of moral compromise that happens with Mars and Mercury, again, just like the Robin Hood example, there can be this kind of like deviance, like a clever trickster, but also sometimes deviant or a little hypocritical even. Something I found that I always have to be really careful of. You know, there's that quality of wanting to break rules and kind of go to the exact opposite side of whatever you say or think you are or are doing. Is there with Mars and Gemini. Jim Morrison, who is very prolific, but very provocative and rebellious, but an also incredible poet and singer. Sean Connery, who is James Bond, slick, intelligent, smooth, crafty, a seductor, a womanizer. Pierce Brosnan, who also played James Bond, both Bonds, Mars and Gemini, also had lots of gadgets and tricks. And, he always has the interesting gadget weapon that he uses. And that's a very Mars and Gemini-like thing. Alexander the Great, who was an incredible conqueror, but also wanted to Hellenize the world. You know, the sort of people often celebrate Alexander, whether he should or shouldn't be celebrated, because of not only being a great conqueror and sort of Hellenizing the world, but also like, culturing other people that needed to be cultured. And that's that kind of agenda of taking over Mars, the conquering hero type of image, as well as the one who educates or disseminates knowledge. And of course, Alexander the Great is one of the first people that we have on record as having encounters from the West with yogis. He was apparently fascinated by them. So it's also this kind of theme of being interested in knowledge. And Alexander the Great was certainly interested in culture and knowledge as well. Mike Tyson, very controversial figure, incredibly fast, incredibly agile, incredibly powerful boxer, technically very precise, but also very strong and powerful. Interestingly, there is a little childlike quality or a youthful quality and even an innocent and sort of feminine quality to Tyson that's really strange. And that's also kind of a Gemini thing. Coco Chanel, who similarly is a famous fashion designer, but she designed women's clothing, I think, if I remember correctly, please correct me out there if someone knows more about this than I do. She was modeling after men's like men's casual work clothing or something like that. So there's this kind of masculine energy that she co-opts and makes really feminine and accessible for women. And that, so she has that kind of crossover, that Mars and Gemini. When I was a kid, for example, going back to my own story, Mars and Gemini, I was writing songs and music and playing guitar, and like people at school, some people really liked me. And there was also a constituent of guys who like really harassed me, like 24/7, calling me gay all the time. And at the time, of course, this was at a point in time where, in the 90s or whatever, like it was still like, for me nowadays, I'd be like, that's fine. I consider it a compliment. Like a lot of my greatest friends are gay. Like I'm not offended by that. I'm not threatened by that at all. But when you're like 14 years old and in growing up in the Midwest, and there's like maybe one gay person in the school that's out at all at that time, you know what I mean? Like not many at all. Homosexuals were like openly gay in my high school anyway. That was like totally traumatizing for me. So one of the things that Mars and Gemini will deal with, whether you're a man or a woman, will be the gender fluidity that you'll sometimes experience with especially the masculine energy just can be more fluid. So at any rate, I experienced that, and certainly that was a part of my own struggles with Mars. Tom Brady and Tiger Woods, incredible technicians, incredible craftsmen of their games, and arguably the greatest of all time, football player and golfer, both Mars and Gemini, both incredible technicians, craftsmen, innovators in their craft. People say that, Tom Brady will pick you apart, that he's not like the strongest arm in the world. He's not even the most accurate in the world. It's that he has this vision for the field and this ability to dissect and read coverages and throw to the right receiver almost every single time. So he has this kind of command and vision of the field that's really incredible. Tiger Woods is talked about almost exactly the same manner. He doesn't always have the greatest skill set in every single area, like irons, putter, wedge game, driver, whatever. But he has this way of being this incredible innovator and seeing the course in ways that other people don't. Jimmy Page, the same thing for guitar. I mean, you get the idea. Daniel Day-Lewis as an actor, one of the most incredibly versatile method actors that we've ever had. So Mars, Mercury, also that combination, Mars and Mercury sign, will show up in people who can, there's this ability to enter into something in a methodical way of entering into something with great flexibility and fluidity. So Daniel Day-Lewis's Mars in Gemini to me is something that corresponds to his incredible abilities as a method actor. Linda Goodman, who is this very powerful astrologer, very, very famous, successful astrologer, sun sign horoscope writer, very famous writer. O.J. Simpson, another person who's talked about in terms of his incredible athletic abilities as a running back, but also, of course, he has this really dark, sort of heinous side of you know, he's convicted, I think it was in the civil trial of murder or wrongful death or something like that. Even though the murder trial, he was criminal trial, he was acquitted, I guess, if that's the right word. But O.J. Simpson, he was skilled in multiple things. He was an actor, a news anchor, a famous athlete, a businessman, all these different skills and talents. He also had a real dark side. You know, there's a really dark side that not a lot of people saw until all this happened. René Descartes, I think therefore I am, father of sort of modern dualism, the brilliance of his theoretical positions obviously have had such an impact on modern thought and Mars and Gemini. The Declaration of Independence happened while Mars was in Gemini. Joni Mitchell, an incredible singer-songwriter, who also has this kind of youthful trickster edge to her, but also this really sort of lovely feminine side. There's, again, a real duality that's built into her her qualities as an artist. Edward Snowden, a famous whistleblower, someone who gets involved in spying and secret information, and there's Mars-Mercury again. Bernie Madoff, the creator of a great Ponzi scheme, right? A trickster with money. James Joyce, an incredibly brilliant, genius, literary figure who writes, like Ulysses and the Dubliners and all sorts of, I read so much of his work in grad school. But James Joyce, total trickster, total innovator, plays with gender fluidity a lot. And is also someone who is quite a maverick and a sort of rebel, but a literary one. Elizabeth Warren, someone who's also an incredibly versatile woman in her skill set and everything that she can do, and that she the way that she knows money. Again, she's sort of she's been someone who's really intelligent when it comes to understanding tax code and money and the distribution of wealth, and she's been a professor. Spike Lee, an incredibly, sort of avant-garde rebel artist who has this curious, kind of, he has a sort of trickster personality, and very articulate, very smart, but very verbally very cutting. Like he can slice and dice you. He has that thing going on, and. So at any rate, there's a list of people, kind of think about with Mars and Gemini. I hope that this, as always, has been useful for you, and that if you have Mars and Gemini stories, that you will share them. Pardon me if I've overshared about my own stories here today. I can't resist sometimes when it comes to certain placements in my own chart. You always want to look at the position of Mercury. Mercury's position will tell you so much more. So Mars in Gemini, where is Mercury in your chart? If you have that placement right now, for example, Mars is in late Gemini, Mercury's in Taurus. So how does that combination go together? that would be the place to start an analysis. But wherever Mercury is in your chart, if you have Mars in Gemini, look very carefully at its house placement, at its dignity by sign, its aspectual relationship with Mars, if it has any, and that will start leading you to building a more complete picture. Because, for example, each of these celebrities that I've just gone through, the position of their natal Mercury will also be a big part of the story. Even though Mars and Gemini can get you quite a lot, you can get just by matching up the Mars and Mercury qualities together. All right, so that's what I've got for you today. I hope that this was interesting, and I look forward to hanging out with you guys again soon. Venus will be entering into Taurus shortly, and Mars will be entering into its fall in the sign of Cancer, which is never really fun for Mars, but it's a really good one to talk about because there are some upsides to that one too. So, all right, talk more soon. Take care. Bye.